Hi, it's Steve Indig at Sport Law. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Hey, Steve. It's Dina. You aren't going to believe what just came across my desk. We need to chat. Give me a call.
Welcome to the latest episode of Sportopia. We're so excited to share our knowledge and have conversations about healthy human sport.
We're delighted to have launched our newest series called Lessons on Leadership. We've had the privilege of connecting with incredible leaders over the past few years and thought it would be helpful for our listeners to learn from some of sport's most inspiring visionaries. In this episode, we welcome Mathieu Genthès, the Chief Executive Officer at Athletics Canada. Mathieu started with Athletics Canada in 2005 as the manager of marketing and communications after holding similar roles with Softball Canada and the Canadian Colleges Athletics Association. In 2008, he became director of public relations and corporate services at Athletics Canada before ascending to the role of chief operating officer 9 years later. We're so delighted to have Mathieu join us to share his lessons on leadership. Welcome, Mathieu.
Welcome. Thank you.
Before we get started, we have this tradition of checking in with each other and finding out what's coming across our desk this week. So, Steve, you're up. What's coming across your desk?
Okay, Dina, I'm stealing a page from your book. I am doing a lot of planning this week, trying to organize personally and professionally for the next 9 months, we'll say, until the end of the calendar year. So spending a lot of time looking at projects in the future, personal trips that I want to take in this year.
Where am I going?
Well, first jaunt would be a little quick getaway downtown Toronto. My wife and I have a very tough time getting time together in our crazy lives. And then looking at a trip, likely for my daughter's birthday, we might be looking at something in New York City.
She will love that.
It's her idea. So try and keep her away from too many shopping centers. But really this week, just looking at a lot of planning over the next 9 months and making sure the company is set up for success. And then also trying to achieve the things that I want to achieve over the next month. What about yourself?
Oh, I'm really happy for you because, you know, planning to fail means if we fail to plan, we end up spinning our wheels and losing time. And I know how good you are with time. Time is money and time is energy. So I'm really happy that you're making time to plan out your time.
Well, we're recording this in mid-March. And of course, this should have been done 2.5 months ago, but it is what it is.
All right, let's be gentle with ourselves, Steve. Okay, good. So I'm looking forward to seeing your pictures on these trips that you're planning to take. And thank you for mapping out stuff on behalf of the company. That's so appreciated. For me, I'm actually doing something that you'll be really happy about. I'm connecting with, I have 4 meetings with different clients who've reached out to us, and one just came in before the call. They want us to respond to either RFPs or they're coming to us because they have significant needs, immediate needs, maybe a crisis or two brewing. So being able to connect, as you know, with our clients and just listen to what their pain points are or what their hopes and aspirations are for a project really fills me up, makes me feel like I'm being in and of service. And usually those calls are on the house. So it's like we're having a virtual coffee. So I'm having lots of coffee virtually with clients this week. What about you, Mathieu? What's going on in your world this week?
Yeah, actually, the theme lessons on leadership's really good for what I've got going on this week. I just happen to have my annual staff reviews with the 6 people that make up my senior leadership team at Athletics Canada. So I've got a bunch of those scheduled this week. And then at the tail end of the week, we've got a big board meeting to present and hopefully approve our 26-27 budget. You know, the NSO world these days, Olympic and Paralympic amateur sport, for sure the finances are are a little dicey at times, and it's a complicated situation right now, and it's a difficult situation. So yeah, looking forward to getting through that this week. And yeah, so it's a pretty busy week, but there is March break just around the corner, and my kids are off school, so I'll be off next week. So yeah, put the head down and get through this week, knowing that next week a little bit of reprieve and a little R&R is just around the corner.
Good. Well, if people are listening, tip number one, we must pause to rejuvenate. We must pause to get away, gain clarity, connect with our loved ones. So, where are you headed? I'm sensing you're probably going somewhere warm, maybe.
That sounds nice, and wishful thinking. No, it's going to be a bit more of a staycation type of thing, and just kind of do day trips with the kids. My daughter's got a couple hockey camps lined up as well, so yeah, a bit of a staycation. We'll kind of figure out day by day what we're doing, but that's actually kind of my favorite kind of vacation. Yeah, really looking forward to it.
Matthew, I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile in preparation for today, and note that we are very similar vintage. The years we were in college and university, as well as entering the sports sector. So I'm, you've been around since the early 2000s in the sector. A couple questions is, why? What motivated you to get into the sector, and why are you still in it?
So I growing up in a small northern town of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, there was pretty much hockey, and then there was hockey, and then if you didn't have anything else to do, you played hockey. So I grew up thinking I was going to be in the NHL, which a lot of boys do, but realized as a goaltender topping out at a whopping 5'9", that probably wasn't going to be in the cards. But I really did like the sport world. And it's funny, like, you talk about the instances in your life that lead you to where you are now. And so I was in grade 11 or 12, really had no idea what I wanted to do with myself yet, other than I kind of liked business and I liked sports. And Laurentian University had somebody come in and do a presentation about the sports administration program. And like, for me, it was like a light went off. I'm like, wait, what? Like this exists. This is a thing. Like I can go to university, get a business degree, and potentially work in sports. So that's kind of where the light went off and the interest kind of grew. And then yeah, after Laurentian University, I was lucky enough to get right into the sport world and just absolutely love it. I just love the work that you put into it and to see athletes succeed and providing opportunities to just represent their country. And so there's so many really cool things. And I kicked it off by talking about the difficulty in finances and that kind of stuff right now in the amateur sport world, but there it's so rewarding in terms of what you do. So that's probably answers the why I'm still around, is I do really enjoy it and love the challenge and love the output of working in sport. I think it's just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great story. And you could go knock on Shorzy's, door and say, hey, maybe there's a role or a cameo for you from Sault Ste. Marie to Sudbury, right? Have you seen the episodes of Shorzy?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit. To be quite honest, I haven't gotten like right into it where I'm watching full on episodes, but I've seen clips and here and there. So I think from the clips, I can pretty much deduce what the what it's about and what the full run's on. But yeah, so certainly familiar with it and recognize old Sudbury Arena as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think what it speaks to is how important sport is. And even in these small communities, what brings us together? Sport, what divides us? Sport, right? My team
Absolutely.
versus your team and everything else. So really appreciate that. We love learning something new about people that we've worked with, Matthew, so that's great. Maybe tell us about a peak leadership experience that you feel aligns with your values and maybe has defined your leadership approach.
That's a good question. I think in terms of a peak leadership experience, I don't look at it as like just one moment. For me, I look at it, it's about an approach, and it's not a single instant. For me, what I get the most out of it and what's really rewarding is I think more of the result of the culture that we've tried to build, especially at the Athletics Canada team. I strongly believe, and we've really tried to install this culture that, if you want people to be at their best and to do their best work, they need to feel respected and supported as kind of people first. And I know that in most organizations, everyone on our staff is juggling with, kind of like real life, right? Families, kids, juggling kids' activities, personal responsibilities, and all sorts of things. So, I really try to lead with the mindset that, those things really matter, and we want to ensure there's a place for them. So, when someone's dealing with something, we support them, and not just in words, but in actions. And we make sure they get through what they're going through, and we're there for them on the other side of it. So, we've had a few instances of that, situations that I've kind of dealt with and navigated. And I think for me, kind of that peak leadership experience is just the recognition and thanks that people have for that kind of approach, kind of after. So, we've really built, I think, an environment where there's real flexibility for people to kind of balance their jobs and their life realities. And we really I run a really family first approach that kind of recognizes that. And when people come up to you and thank you for that, or in a certain moment where they were juggling with a thousand things, and you were supportive or provided an environment where they can kind of juggle both things, and they kind of go out of their way to thank you for that after. And for kind of creating that environment, like for me, those are the experiences that I really kind of value. So, and really in my experience, kind of when you create that kind of culture, that kind of environment, people rise through it. So, I think for me, it's not about a moment. It's about kind of creating that environment and those moments where people recognize that, they're in a kind of a really special place where they're being valued, and not just as a staff person, but as a person.
To play off that, Matthew, to come up with that values or that approach to leadership, there's a lot of accommodation, there's a lot of flexibility. I guess as a two-part question is, have you seen that being taken advantage of? And then also, have there been some challenging experiences that you've had to deal with? And then how did that shape you or maybe change your mentality on a particular topic moving forward?
Yeah, so I think with the first part of it, I don't, when you create kind of that kind of culture and that kind of environment, in my experience, we haven't had people take advantage of it. I think there's a few reasons for that. I think number one is I think people feel lucky to be in that kind of environment. It's not always, every organization's not like that. Whether it's the sporting world, sport industry, government, private business. There are lots of horror stories out there. And I think so when people recognize that they're in a place where, they can kind of balance and juggle those things and there's space for that, I think people value that and they kind of, quote unquote, don't want to mess it up. So, we really haven't had experience where people are taking advantage of that. But I, from a challenging perspective, I'd say anytime that you're making decisions when you know they're not going to please everyone, and I think in sport especially, people are incredibly passionate. Whether it's athletes, coaches, your provincial branches, your officiating community, everyone cares so deeply about what they're doing and their place within it that it does kind of, there's a bit of a heightened awareness around that. So, I think in the moments where, I've had to make decisions that were kind of more necessary for the, long-term health of the organization or the direction that we're going in or kind of strategically. Sometimes those can create some short-term tension till you kind of get through those moments. So those are never easy. And especially when the people on the other side of the conversation are kind of people that you respect and you care about at the end of the day, but you kind of have to make those decisions. But what really kind of reinforces it for me is leadership kind of requires kind of clarity and integrity. I think those are kind of two things that are pretty important. So you have to listen carefully, and I've always, whether it's when I became CEO or when I became COO prior to that, like for me, it's always kind of listen first. And that's always my approach. Whether I'm coaching my kids' minor sports or whatever it is, or whether I'm part of like a new like men's league pickup hockey group. Like for me, the first thing is when you're in a new group is listen first. Who are these people? What's important to them? Not just kind of jump in and kind of grunt your way through it, and so I always think that kind of like listening first and kind of gathering those perspectives is really useful. And then when you're having to make decisions, then once you've done that, I think one, you have a bit more respect, credibility, and you can make better decisions. So, I think that's super important. And kind of all those different experiences really, shape me that by reinforcing that, leadership, it's not always about avoiding difficult moments. It's kind of about navigating them with honesty, respect, transparency. So, one of the most challenging things I've, learned as a leader is that, sometimes doing the right thing disappoints people, right? And you have to be okay with that. And I find, I think you see a lot of it come early in leadership. You want everyone to feel good about decisions, right? You want those wins all the time, and that's like the easiest way to gain people's support. But you over time you realize that's not possible. So I think that's some of the challenges that you end up navigating. But yeah, hopefully that kind of answered what you're looking for.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew. I was just writing down sometimes doing the right things disappoints people. I think that's really powerful because I've been taking notes here around your philosophy of management by values. And interestingly enough, I'm taking you back a moment. I interviewed the then CEO of Athletics Canada and was talking to him and other leaders in the NSO community for my master's research. I was really curious, beyond mitigating and eliminating risks, is there a way for us to get ahead of all of this and start to lay a foundation that brings the right people together on this bus, as Jim Collins would say, and then help us define where we want to go? Why we want to go there, who are we going there on behalf of, and then what are the values that we're going to use to make these really good decisions? And I so appreciated that you spoke about short-term implications. Sometimes doing the right thing is not immediately, recognized by people as being the right thing. But if you're forecasting for 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, or as wisdom from Indigenous people is calling us to think about 7 generations, then of course those that are more focused on short-term success aren't going to be able to see, your vision. So I appreciate that. And the other little anecdote I'll share is in research, we and Jim Collins again just referencing his beautiful work around good to great and level 5 leadership, which you're speaking, our love language around that, Matthew, your way of sharing your stories around being deliberate, intentional, listening first. So he has this little anecdote that goes something like this. The most impactful leaders that stay the course are those that are more introverted often. And the reason why is they tend to listen first and then respond, not react. So that is something that you were speaking to. And he uses this analogy of saying the most impactful leaders that he saw, and he traced this over performance metrics that was economically driven. He said these leaders exhibited, this quality of being and of leadership that sounds something like this. When things go wrong, they look in the mirror and they ask themselves, what can I do to help support or fix the issue? When things are going right, they're looking out the window and learning from their people and learning about what are the practices and the approaches and the relationships that the leader can help stimulate more of. So just in listening to you, it felt like you were really aligned with Jim Collins' level 5 leadership model.
Yeah, I'm familiar with his work for sure, yeah, that's interesting. Interesting parallel for sure.
Matthew, again, I keep going back to our vintage. You've been in the sector over 20 years, as a have I, and I'm wondering your thoughts on the evolution of sport. We always, from my perspective, I always kind of use this example. 20 years ago, we would have recommended 5 policies to run a sport organization, and today we're recommending somewhere close to 30. So obviously, the sport has become more policy driven. Different issues, different things we have to tackle on a daily basis. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on managing that evolution, and then what do you see the future looking like?
Yeah, real great question. I mean, I think the biggest evolution that I've seen, and I think it's been probably in the last 8 to 10 years, but probably closer to that kind of the 7 to 8 year mark, is really the whole piece around kind of like winning well. And I think when I first came into the sport industry, I think it was really about kind of winning no matter what. Now, there's different, no matter what can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but I think it was really about, it was performance driven. It was, how many medals do we have? Was this successful? Did we win at this, whatever this was? And now I think obviously performance is always going to be an important part of sport. There's no doubt. I mean, that is why you get involved in sport. But I really do think there's a really big emphasis now in the sports system and the sport industry is, how are we treating people? How did we get that win? What was the path to the win? Did we do it equitably? Did we do it fairly? Did we trample on people to get that win? And I think there's a real realization of, the path is important. So it's not just the result, but it's the process to get there. So for me, like that's the thing that I've seen change the most, and obviously change for the better. And a lot of the things that I talked about in terms of, the culture that we've built at Athletics Canada, and kind of family first, and being real flexible with people and allowing them to have kind of a work-life balance. Like I'm not sure that is even possible 15 years ago, right? I don't like that wouldn't even been a thought. Yeah, I think that's the biggest change, and obviously that's a really good change. And you talk about the importance of a good culture and the process and everything. I look at Athletics Canada, and again, I don't want to speak about, there's lots of factors at play, but 15, 20, 25 years ago, we weren't exactly a performing country on the international stage when it came to, World Championships, Olympic Games, Paralympic Games. And things were definitely operating in a more kind of, let's call it, a cutthroat nature type of thing. And you look at how we operate now and the team that we've built, the results are there. Now, there's a whole bunch of reasons why the results are there now, but I have to believe that, the way we treat people and the way that we do things now and the way that we're getting there has an impact for sure in terms of the end result. And again, it's and that's winning at sport at the end of the day. So yeah, I think that's the biggest change, bar none. And a lot of that winning well is reflected in what you were saying, right? From the 5 to the 30 policies, because there's lots of framing that we want to put around things now to make sure that, good governance is in place and things are being done kind of in a good way. So that's the biggest change. And in terms of where we're going, that's, man, I wish I had that answer. I think what you're kind of starting to see is, and I don't know how this is going to manifest itself in the sports system, but you're definitely starting to see more and more of an emphasis on, participation, getting people access to sport, removing barriers, essentially kind of like getting more people involved in the sport. And, I'm seeing a shift in that for sure at an NSO level. And I think that's a good thing. Because at the end of the day, if we want those podium performances, if we want those moments where Canadians are watching or be able to watch these moments and Canadians are doing well and winning medals, we know that people are very proud about that. And that's very, it's nation building. We need kind of like that next generation. So, I can see that that's kind of where we're starting to head is placing an importance on that. How we're going to fund that, I guess that's where I'd love to have the crystal ball, but I certainly see an evolution towards that and, really interested to see over the next few years on kind of how that manifests itself. But that's what I'm seeing is a real emphasis on that part of the sport now.
I find this really inspiring, and in part because, when I first started working in sport in 1991, right out of journalism school, I had so much hope and passion for athletes being treated well and for the possibility that sport could transform communities and shape the lives of individuals and bring people together and translate that into thriving environments, right from the beginning. And it's so interesting, Matthew, when I look back and I think about where we are now. Everybody's talking about the Norwegian model after stellar Olympic Games from the Norwegians, and It seems to me in Canada, after the Dubin inquiry, which I was doing my journalism thesis on, Dubin said we don't have a doping issue, we have a moral crisis. And if we look at how we're responding, maybe reacting would be a better choice of words to some of the pain points in the Canadian sports system right now that is being echoed around the world, by the way. Do we want to take a more compliance focused look at this, or can we pause and ask ourselves, and this is what you're inspiring, begin with the end in mind. What is the impact of sport? Why sport in the first place? And it seems to me that in Canada, in response to that, the leaders at the time that I was being mentored by brought a social change approach to this problem called doping that they knew was not just doping. It was also about, even back then, about violence and harassment and exclusionary practices and the high cost of sport. So these barriers to sport is what we called it. And so the antidote to this was true sport. And true sport now is, on pause. And so our hope is with the commission that who recommended as part of their long list of recommendation that we not forget about the purpose of sport and ensuring that, the lived experience of it and centering it around these values that you were speaking to, these holistic expressions that will help to ensure that people will thrive, right? And they will thrive because of the system, not in spite of it. So any thoughts about that before we move into our last question with you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's totally accurate. I see it. Like, I understand. And I think, as you get older and you get more experience, and obviously, if you're having this conversation with me, 20 years ago when I first started in sport, I was a different person back then, different lived experiences. So my answers would have been a little bit different. But I find it's interesting. Like, I find, I'm involved with both my kids' sports. On boards, coaching, assistant coaching, like just involved in everything that they do. And I just, for me, like that's where I see the value of sport. Like I see them and their friend groups and the power of sport and when it's done well and how this builds like life skills and coping skills and just learning such important life lessons and whether it's teamwork, how to lose, how to win, how to interact within a group. So, I mean, there's so much stuff. So for me, like I actually take from that and apply it to how, essentially I'm leading an Olympic and Paralympic international, basically sport organization, right? So it's so funny. Like it's minor, the local little minor sports, but like for me, having that connection to that is like so important in how you look at sport. So yeah, I think absolutely. And I don't know. I'm such a from when I was born, like sport is just everything and it's so important. And having access to sport and having a good experience in sport. And good experience doesn't always mean winning. But just having a good experience, like it's shaped me. It's shaping my kids. And I just see such tremendous value in that. So for me, that's one of the reasons amongst many why it's so important that we kind of do it right. So yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, on that note, the last question that Steve and I wanted to ask of you has to do with one piece of wisdom. We can talk a lot about many things, but if we have to distill it down to one thing. And what I really appreciate about what you're speaking to, because this is a shared value between Steve and I and our people at Sportlaw, is giving back to the next generation. So we give internship opportunities, we take calls, especially for me, for young women leaders or students who are wanting to come into the sports system. I would say it's really hard right now. I have three kids and I have one who's just graduated, magna cum laude from the human kinetics program at U Ottawa, and he's been trying to come into the system, and he's worked with, he volunteered with CPC and did an internship there. It's really hard to come into this system. So I've been trying to support him in that and recognizing that you got to do the work, kind of like elbows up, hands in kind of thing. So you've said something here that I think would be really, really helpful for all leaders to hear, and that's working well, leading well, parenting well, living well. Because you talked about this intersection between coaching, parenting, and leading. And we often talk about this beautiful triangle, right? And if we do that, the kids are going to thrive. And then we're going to thrive as the parent, the official, the coach, the leader. So any last piece of wisdom that you might give to young emerging leaders who are kind of trying to make their way into this sport system, so we are like creating that solid, renewable energy, right? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, and it sounds probably a little simplistic, but it's just be yourself. Like I find, early in leadership, there's like people get put into leadership positions. There's this temptation that I need to prove myself. I need to move fast. I need to make bold changes. I have to show impact real quick. But real leadership is about building trust and building systems that last, right? And we kind of see that in the sports system now. And I'm sure there's a place for kind of brash, loud leadership, and for some people that's authentic and that works. But for me, leadership only works if it's genuine, because people see right through it. So I've learned that you have to be who you are, and I'm not the loudest person in the room, and I don't try to pretend to be. There's nothing wrong with being kind of the quiet leader, someone who doesn't always need to be at the front. Trust your people, empower them, and obviously step forward when it matters most and I need to. But for me, like, leadership's not about volume. It's about clarity, consistency, and kind of knowing when to use your voice. So yeah, it's kind of be yourself. And clearly, I'm talking about how I am, but that's who I am, and that's how I lead. And at the end of the day, try and make decisions that you'll still be proud of 5 years from now. There's gonna be mistakes that you make along the road, but that's normal. So how you achieve things matters probably the most. So that's what people remember. But honestly, for me, the like above everything is just kind of be authentic and be yourself. So whoever you are, and whatever, however you're comfortable, like, that's how you should lead. Otherwise, it's not authentic. And like I said, people will see right through that. And that's hard to be a leader in that kind of situation.
Wow, thanks, Matthew. The hard part is over. And just before we let you go, we like to do a little bit of a rapid fire question. And it just allows our learners to learn a little bit more about you personally. So don't spend a lot of time thinking it's going to come quick from Dina and I. Just say the first thing that comes to your mind. There'll be like three or four questions, and then we'll say goodbye. So I'll start. If you could master one sport overnight, what would it be?
Formula One racing.
Okay, wow. Texting, emailing, or talking?
1,000% texting.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee, black, nothing in it.
Oh, a man after my own heart. Okay, great. What's a book you always recommend to others?
Oh, that's tough. I got nothing right now.
Nothing right now? Okay, what's a
Nothing right now.
podcast?
That's not a title, by the way. That's not a book. I got nothing right now.
That's awesome.
Don't look it up.
That's actually a good, I like that. You're funny. Okay, well, Matthew's going to come back at some point in the future and he's going to let us know what his favorite book is. So that's great,
Absolutely.
Matthew. We really appreciate, just getting to know you better. I'm smiling. People can't see it, but hopefully they can hear it in my voice. And my biggest takeaway is, when we focus on the little things, when we focus on the people, when we listen and then choose wisely, when we're our true self, when we show up authentically, then we kind of create that culture where all of us can rise. So I'm really grateful to you for showing up today.
Yeah, I appreciate the invitation. This was a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'd love to come back on.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks to you and Steve and to our trusted podcast producer, Robin. These things wouldn't happen without her. So, Robin, thank you so much. And Steve's going to bring it home.
Yeah, again, thank you, Matthew, for your time. It was really cool to learn about you, your journey, and your leadership style. It's really interesting to hear. So hopefully I know our listeners will learn a lot about that. In the episode notes below, you'll find some Sportlaw blogs, where you can find more information related to our conversation today. Thank you so much to our listeners. We are so grateful to share our vision of Sportopia with you and to elevate sport.
As always, to have your say in Sportopia, email us at hello@sportlaw.ca to let us know what you want to hear about next. Have a wonderful week, and we look forward to connecting with you very soon. Until then, be well.